All right, that's a wrap for Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. And I have to ask, is any week one winner so far? I know the 49ers and the Jets haven't played yet, but is any week one winner clearly better than San Francisco? And it's going to take more than 1 week to answer this question, but 1 week is all that we can use right now to talk about things. And we just watched an absolutely pathetic finish for the Rams. Spare me with the fatigue argument. You cannot let another team in a National Football League game run the ball down the entire field into the end zone with the game on the line in overtime. The Lions only had to pass the ball one time to march the ball down the entire field. The Rams looked like a JV team playing varsity in that fifth quarter. Now, I get it. It's week one, so the fatigue sets in more than in other weeks. I get it. You've got to build up some of that endurance. That's obvious. But it takes energy to play offense and execute on the offensive line as well. And it's week one for the Lions, too. It should never get to the point just because of one extra drive, which is what overtime meant. It should never get to the point where an offense can just steamroll you down the field. That was reminiscent of 49ers Packers in the 2019 season playoffs, the NFC Championship game that year. And the 49ers won. They went up like 30-3 in that game, 27-0, I think, 30-3. This, though, I mean, it was a great competitive game for the Rams and the Lions for four quarters, and then the Rams just weren't competitive down the stretch. Final score, what was it? 26-20, right? Yeah, 26-20 in overtime. The Lions maintain a slight edge over the Rams. They played in the playoffs last year where the Lions had a slight edge over the Rams. I'm watching that game, and I'm wondering, did either of these two teams improve significantly? Rams, definitely not. Now they got to worry about the Puka Nacua injury. Cooper Kupp might be better this year. He had the career year in 2021. He's been slowed by injuries and other stuff here over 2022 and 2023. Stafford might be healthier than he was before until today, where it looked like he tweaked the ankle. Jimmy Garoppolo is actually the backup for the Rams. Kupp made a really, really nice catch there late. But if you can't stop the run, you're not challenging the 49ers in the NFC West. Why don't we look through the rest of the league? That's what this show is going to be all about on Sunday night. The pathetic finish for the Rams. How about 49ers QBU? They brought in Sam Darnold, who had been with the Jets and with Carolina. Darnold was the backup last year. He impressed everybody during training camp, beat out Trey Lance. And then today, as the starting quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings, Sam Darnold completed 79% of his passes for two touchdowns and a 113.2 rating. 28-6 win, Vikings over the Jets. But the Shanahan School of QB rehab is the story here. Sam Darnold signed for $10 million with the Minnesota Vikings. It was enough to put him out of the 49ers' range. They're only able to spend about $4 million for their backup. That was Josh Dobbs, is actually the higher price backup than the number two, Brandon Allen, who's somewhere between $1 and $2 million. So Dobbs and Allen combined salaries are not anywhere near what Sam Darnold is making this year, which is why Sam signed with the Vikings, even though I think there was a chance he was going to be QB2 there. They drafted J.J. McCarthy. I think even if McCarthy had stayed healthy, he had the knee surgery that's going to knock him out for the season. Even if he had stayed healthy, Sam Darnold has been good enough over the past 2 years. You know, even the final six-game stretch of 2022 with Carolina, he played some good football. But Sam Darnold was going to be that starter to start the season for the Vikings at the very least. But since McCarthy is not available this year, it's Sam Darnold's job. And he's now auditioning for a very lucrative contract. Still a relatively young quarterback. And the way that he played today, that's a really, really good start for Sam Darnold. How about the Bengals losing to the New England Patriots? They were favored by quite a bit, and they couldn't get it done. They only scored 10 points. It was 16 to 10. So my question is Joe Burrow going to be held to the same standard as Brock Purdy, even though Brock Purdy has never presided over a game where the 49ers managed only 10 points? This is where the media, social media, uninformed fans, wherever you go to for your information, this is where they get it really wrong regarding Brock Purdy on the majority, at least based on what I see. Purdy can have a three-game stretch as he did last year where the 49ers only produced 17 points in each of the three games. And he'll get, just bashed and everybody will say it's all his fault, even though there were a lot of qualifiers there. Trent Williams was hurt. Debo Samuel was hurt. Christian McCaffrey was hurt at the start of it. Purdy had a concussion. The 49ers defense was playing terrible football. That doesn't help the offense either. Puts them in bad situations. And Purdy bounced back from it and turned into an MVP finalist, which proved the people who were overreacting to that three-game stretch wrong. Well, if the overreactions happened then to Purdy, who wasn't even playing terrible football, I think he was playing solid football. He just wasn't playing at his very best in that three-game stretch where he was only managing 17 points a game. What are they going to say about Joe Burrow managing only 10 points against the New England Patriots team that isn't supposed to be any good this year? I would just like to see things evenly adjudicated. And Joe Burrow, just because he's a first overall draft pick, shouldn't be treated any differently in the media than Brock Purdy. Speaking of bad quarterback performances, Kirk Cousins was absolutely putrid today for the Atlanta Falcons. It's weird seeing Kirk Cousins in that Atlanta uniform. I got more used to him in the Vikings uniform early on. Maybe it's because they played the 49ers in his first game with the Vikings back in 2018. That was a good performance from Kirk Cousins. The 49ers had a terrible defense that year, but he definitely did not have the same type of welcome where Justin Fields and the Pittsburgh Steelers beat Kirk Cousins and the Falcons today. Two picks, a rating under 60. The second pick that really effectively sealed the game was a really bad one. Cousins was unable to fend off the pressure, and he just threw one into the teeth of the defense. 155 passing yards for Kirk Cousins. That is a bad, bad performance. I could probably see here the passing per attempt, 4.9. Anytime that's under five, it's atrocious. But, I mean, speaking of under 5 yards per attempt, that was Caleb Williams today. I mean, Williams was god-awful for the Bears. I get it. It's his first time starting, his first NFL game, so probably can't expect too much, although a lot of people did expect a lot wrongfully. They thought that, oh, number one pick, Caleb Williams, he runs around a lot in the backfield at USC, he's going to be good in the NFL. The NFL doesn't work that way. The whole running around a lot doesn't – you have to play on time in the National Football League. This is why people underestimated Brock Purdy and are overrating somebody like Caleb Williams. That's not to say that Caleb Williams can't figure it out, but he could also go in the direction of Will Levis, who was even worse than him on the field today. Williams was at 3.2 yards per attempt. 3.2. Like, that is unfathomably bad. I want to get the full stats out for Caleb Williams right now. 14 of 29 for 93 yards. Again, 3.2 yards per attempt. But the rating was 55.7 for Williams because he didn't throw a pick. Will Levis, on the other side, he threw for a few more yards, 127. But the rating was worse, especially because of the just atrocious pick six. There was also a punt blocked and returned for a touchdown by Jonathan Owens of the Bears. So the Bears scored with a Cairo Santos field goal, the Owens return of a blocked punt for a touchdown, two more field goals, and the pick six of Will Levis. So somehow Will Levis was even worse than Caleb Williams. That was the takeaway from the Bears beating the Titans 24-17. Trevor Lawrence absolutely fell apart in the game between the Dolphins and Jacksonville. Jacksonville was actually up early in this game. Go through the scoring. It was 14-0 early on, 17-7 at halftime. Then it was all Miami in the second half. Trevor Lawrence attempted only one pass in the fourth quarter. So you pay the guy $55 million a year, and then you can't even – it was partially his fault. A lot of it was his fault. Couldn't control the game to the point where he was actually on a platform to deliver plays. He threw once. He was 0-for-1 in the fourth quarter. Tua Tagovailoa had a much better day, 338 yards for Tua Tagovailoa. Lawrence only threw for 162. That's got to be disappointing for Jacksonville. Checking in on Eric Armstead. See how his stat line looked. He had a sack today. Sack, a quarterback hit, and I think the tackle for loss is the sack for Eric Armstead playing for Jacksonville. Seattle, the Seahawks won. They were expected to win. I mean, I would hope they would win. They're playing the Denver Broncos, who are in salary cap hell, giving the dead money to Russell Wilson, who are in a definite rebuilding year. The rookie Bo Nix is starting for the Seattle Seahawks, starting for the Denver Broncos, and the Seahawks made it a game for longer than it had to be. They took two safeties in the first half. They almost took a third. They were backed up again after the two safeties against their own goal line, but they were able to get out of it. The second half was a lot better than for Seattle than the first. In fact, I could open up the splits here. Why don't we look at the halftime splits versus the second half splits for Geno Smith? In the first half, Geno Smith threw for 59 yards with a 43.4 rating. Not good. In the second half, or actually, I can't do it by halves. I could do it by quarter. In the third quarter, it improved for Geno Smith. He threw for 59 yards with a 96.7 rating. So didn't throw all too much, but he was efficient at least in that there. And then I think in the fourth quarter, he did a little bit more damage, 53 yards with the touchdown. He had the, so they didn't throw all too much. I was keeping my eye on that Seahawks game, not as closely anymore in the second half as they started pulling away, but he only had three incompletions in the entire second half and a rating over 100. So the floodgates opened for Seattle. Bo Nix had a nice touchdown run there at the end. It was a 26-20 score for the Seahawks to win the game. But the offense looked disjointed as hell in the first half, and that was not impressive. But it is week one, and you look at week one with a grain of salt. Jim Harbaugh said today, and we're going to get to Jim Harbaugh right now, that the most improvement comes between week one and week two. And I think that I agree with that. I think that each subsequent week, who a team is becomes more and more ingrained. So right now you have the most moldable clay if you're an NFL coach or if you're an NFL team heading into week two. So we'll see what Seattle's all about moving into week two. There are a lot of predictions that Geno Smith is going to have some kind of surge this year. I just don't see why. I don't see the supporting evidence for why. Geno Smith is Geno Smith. I know that he was put into a better situation with the Seahawks, so he has played better in Seattle than he had at any other point before in his career. But I don't see why the recent couple years would be remarkably different from what we see this season. I think that they're going to have an above average offense, but they're competing with the 49ers in the NFC West, and that's the number one offense in the league. And then, you know, with McDonald, the new coach of the Seattle Seahawks, you expect their defense to get better. It's funny because Pete Carroll was a defensive coach, but toward the end of the Pete Carroll era, the Seahawks weren't playing good defense and the 49ers were carving them up. So I do think that Seattle will improve as a football team, but to challenge the 49ers, you're going to have to be elite on the one of the sides of the ball. Like, because the 49ers are going to bring elite offense for sure, and they're hoping to bring elite defense as well this year. They're hoping that defense improves. And I just don't see potential for that on either side of the ball for the Seahawks. I'm going to get back to the Rams and the Lions in a little bit, because those are obviously two teams that people are eyeing as far as potential challengers of the 49ers and the NFC. The Dallas Cowboys beat the Browns 33-17. Cleveland was missing both of its starting offensive tackles. So the game went about how I thought it would go for the Browns, given that against Micah Parsons and the Dallas edge rush. When you look at the way that the Cowboys fire off the edge, it's a boomer bust defense. A team that's unable to block anybody with two backup tackles is not going to fare well. Combine that with the fact that Deshaun Watson just isn't a good quarterback anymore. He's horribly inaccurate. He doesn't look comfortable in the pocket. I guess he can move decently well when he's running in a straight line, but I don't think that he moves well in the context of what you need to do to manipulate the pocket at the quarterback position, something that Brock Purdy does at an elite level. So, I mean, the Browns were hopelessly overmatched, but I wouldn't put all too much stock into the Cowboys' win for that reason. The Cowboys beat up on bad teams last year, and the version of offense that the Browns threw out there today was a bad offense. So it was the Cowboys, again, beating up on a bad team. Other side of the football, I get it. The Browns had a really good defense last year. They should be at least solid on that side of the ball this season. And Dallas, I think, did what they had to do on the offensive side of the ball, but they weren't remarkably explosive in this game or remarkably productive in this game. Dak Prescott threw for 179 yards. A little bit. I don't even know if he's at 60% completion percentage today. He took care of the football, though. But the run game wasn't great for the Cowboys. And I think that Ezekiel Elliott, who's definitely past his prime, he's back with Dallas now. If he's your running back one for the whole season, they are not going to challenge the 49ers. We should all see the importance of the running back position. I think it's growing in importance now in the league to mitigate some of these pass rushes. I mean, these pass rushes have real teeth. Saw Myles Garrett get to Dak Prescott today. Big hit. Looked a little scary on the elbow. Imagine that. Imagine if Dak got hurt the day that he signed the contract, the largest one in NFL history. But thankfully, he's okay. But to take the teeth out of some of these intense pass rushes, you have to be able to run the ball. And to run the ball, you can't just have some replacement-level guy, or in Ezekiel Elliott's case, I would argue probably lower than replacement level at this stage in his career. I mean, he has a lot of mileage on his body. He rushed for 40 yards today. I think Rico Dowdle is the younger back for the Cowboys. He might be the better back for the Cowboys, but for whatever reason, he's not top on the pecking order yet. He had 8 carries today, so it wasn't like he was too far down the usage load. But I think it's really, really important for Dallas to see a younger, fresher running back successfully take the reins. They lost Tony Pollard. He's now with the Titans. But it doesn't matter who they have as a weapon downfield. I know CeeDee Lamb has re-signed, and I know that Dak Prescott has all that money. I love Jake Ferguson, the tight end. They also have Brandon Cooks. So they have weapons downfield, but if you don't have a good running game to mitigate some of these pass rushes, and I don't think that you're going to get to where you need to be with Ezekiel Elliott, I think the Cowboys are going to remain a tier below the 49ers. Look what I put here for the Cowboys game. Deshaun Watson plus two backup tackles is not good. Jim Harbaugh, let's get to him. His first win for the Chargers, which happened today against the Raiders, reminiscent of his first win for the 49ers back in 2011. Now, it was like a plodding effort. The final score in this Chargers-Raiders game was 22-10. So, kind of an ugly score. Not a lot of offense. And go to Herbert's numbers. He threw for 144 yards. Wonder how many yards Alex Smith threw for. Let me look that up. See how many yards Alex Smith threw for in Harbaugh's first game with the 49ers. Probably going to be around where Justin Herbert finished today at 144. I have to go way back into the archives here. Go to 2011, week one. Go to the stats. The 49ers beat the Seahawks 33-17. Alex Smith threw for 124 yards. So Smith, week one, Harbaugh's first game with the Niners, 124 yards, 49ers win against Seattle. Justin Herbert, 144 yards. The Chargers win against the Raiders. So it was one of those slow plodding efforts. I think a Harbaugh offense is built to pick up steam over the course of the season, especially when he's first introducing it to a new team. I don't know if the Chargers have the personnel to run power the way that the 49ers were able to run it with Mike Iupati and Joe Staley and Alex Boone back in 2011. But Harbaugh is certainly going to try to implement it. And he's going to just try to squeeze the air out of football games. And that's what they did to the Raiders today. Now, the 2011 opener for Harbaugh against the Seahawks, I think people remember that a little bit differently because the score was 33-17. But it was that way because Ted Ginn had two returns for touchdowns. First, 102-yard kickoff return. The score at the time was 19-17, 49ers over the Seahawks. Doug Baldwin had just caught a 55-yard touchdown pass from Tavares Jackson with 3:56 to go in the game. Ted Ginn took the ensuing kickoff 102 yards to put the 49ers up 26-17. And then he returned a punt 55 yards for a touchdown for the 33-17 win. So people remember that game as being a much more explosive 49ers effort than it actually was. It was explosive special teams wise, but not from the offense. And I just found it interesting that Jim Harbaugh's tenure started in a similar way today. How embarrassing are the Carolina Panthers? My goodness. They went into the Superdome and the Saints beat them a lot to a little. I'm looking for the score. Did they even list it here? Or did they get relegated? Did Carolina get relegated to the CFL or something? Where is it? It was an ugly. Oh, I'm looking at 2011. That's why. No wonder. Okay, we're back now. We're back from the past, back to the future. New Orleans and Carolina. As I said, a lot to a little, and I'm still here. It is 47-10. Derek Carr had himself a nice game. Derek Carr had himself a 19 of 23 performance, only four incompletions for 200 yards, three touchdowns, and a 142.5 rating. Meanwhile, Bryce Young, 32.8 rating. I think it's safe to say that C.J. Stroud was the better of the two quarterbacks taken at the top of the draft last year. Thank goodness for Christian McCaffrey that he was able to escape Carolina. That would have been a massive, massive waste if he was still in the Panthers. There were some wasted years for Christian with Carolina. Thankfully, he's been able to overcome those. And that trade allowed him to go to much greener pastures with the 49ers. And then there was, speaking of C.J. Stroud, this was a great game. I really, really liked watching DeMeco Ryans and the Houston Texans against the Colts. That was 29-27. I loved watching both C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson. I have typically found the AFC South to be a boring division. It just doesn't do it for me. The Colts are a blue blood franchise going back to the Johnny Unitas days in Baltimore. But so much of the rest of that division, the Texans, the Titans, just teams that don't really move the needle for me. So when, especially, I grew up in the 90s, right? So I think of Texas football's Dallas Cowboys, and I think of them playing the 49ers. I've always thought that the AFC South brought just bad uniform combinations. And it really, and Jacksonville is also in that division too, right? And that's an expansion team from the 1990s. For the AFC South to move a true needle with me, and I think with a lot of fans, because it doesn't have a true blue blood beyond the Colts in it, then you've got to have some great players. And in the NFL, the quarterback position is so important. So you've got to have a couple great quarterbacks, at least a couple. If C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson have many more battles like the one we saw today with Houston beating the Colts 29-27, I think that we could have a fun time watching the AFC South. That's good for the AFC South's brand. Richardson ran his ass off, and he had this beautiful long touchdown pass early in the game. It was a 60-yarder. I think it traveled like 55 or 56 in the air. Seemed like, I think the stadium in Indy is a dome, but if it was played outside and there were clouds, it might have brought down rain. It was fun to watch him play today. He only threw 19 times, only 9 completion, 9 of 19, but 212 yards. It's a lot of yards per completion for Anthony Richardson. I guess it helps when you've got a 60-yard touchdown in there. Let me add this up. 212 divided by 9. 23.6 yards per completion. Holy crap. And still a pretty good yards per attempt. 212 divided by 19 isn't terrible. Yeah, 11.2. He also ran the ball, as I said, a little bit. 56 yards. He was the Colts' leading rusher. So that was the day. We also had, earlier in week one, we had the Ravens and the Chiefs. I think those were two of the best teams to play over the past few days. And the Packers and the Eagles, those were also two good teams. Now, Jordan Love is hurt. The Eagles look significantly improved. You know, everybody's pointing at Saquon Barkley, and I think that's a big, big arrow up for Philadelphia. But the biggest thing they had to do was to arm Nick Sirianni with some decent coordinators. They didn't have those last year. So they now have Kellen Moore in as the offensive coordinator. I think he's an improvement for the Eagles. And they have Vic Fangio in as the defensive coordinator. I think he's an improvement. To me, it was really hard to judge what happened defensively in that game on the field in Brazil because the field was so bad. But I think offensively, as long as you've got competent guys in there, and you know, I think Sirianni just wasn't cutting it last year. I think as long as you've got somebody that can call those plays and do a competent job, then this team has to get better. And yes, having Saquon Barkley does help the Philadelphia Eagles. As far as Baltimore and Kansas City go, I feel that those teams are known commodities. Kansas City still has the edge over the Ravens, but maybe the Ravens can do something to creep past Kansas City. It's going to have to start with Lamar Jackson playing better in the playoffs. But it seems to me that the potential challengers to the 49ers all played on Thursday or Friday of this weekend. I was not impressed with what I saw from the Lions or the Rams. I didn't think that Jared Goff was good. I've never thought that he was a world-beating quarterback. Matthew Stafford, there was so many dropped interceptions in that game, and then the Rams just completely laid down at the end. Fatigue or not, you can't, like I said at the start of the show, you cannot get run over like a JV high school team playing varsity in overtime, and that's what happened to the Rams. I find it really hard to argue that either the Rams or the Lions. That was a slip. I called them the Lambs. They look like the Lambs down the stretch of that game in overtime against the run of the Lions. But I find it really hard to argue that either the Rams or the Lions improved significantly enough to overtake the 49ers this year. The Lions were close last season. I totally get that. But the 49ers are set to improve this year. The 49ers did not have a great defense last year. They're about number 10 in the league on the efficiency scale. And they replaced their coordinator. They replaced half their defensive line. They made their secondary better. They might have dropped off a little bit at the linebacker level, just a little bit, but because of the Dre Greenlaw injury. But they do have Devondre Campbell in there, and I think they're going to be better as a defense with all of the new pieces that they added, both in the booth and on the sideline and obviously on the field. And the 49ers already have the number one offense. So to move the needle, to beat a team that has been dominant in the NFC, especially last year, and I think the year before too, if Brock Purdy hadn't gotten hurt, you have to show something a little extra. And the Rams and the Rams and the Lions were neck and neck last season. Their playoff game was a really close one. And this year was the same exact thing. Unless both of those teams have improved remarkably at the same pace to keep that game as close as it was, I don't think anything that happened today has the 49ers quaking in their boots. I really don't. Now, what happened over the course of the first 2 days of this season, on Thursday and Friday, you saw the Ravens play and the Chiefs, and I thought that was a high-level football game, came down to the very end. And then what we saw out of the Eagles and the Packers, now, that's something to talk about because the Eagles clearly have more competent offensive and defensive coaching than they did last year. I'm not going to read too much further into that game because, again, the playing surface, everything happening in Brazil, that it was tough. It was a tough situation for everybody involved, especially tough for the Packers who lost Jordan Love. But I would really keep an eye on the Eagles, because if they're better coached with the new coordinators this year, that could be a team that threatens to at least surpass somebody like the Lions. They did just beat the Packers, who they had fallen behind last year. They might be able to surpass somebody like the Rams after falling down the stretch of last season. But as far as overtaking the 49ers, it's so early. I think only the Ravens and the Chiefs right now are the two teams that I could confidently say will be on the same level as San Francisco, considering full health. And tomorrow the 49ers take the field against the Jets, where my prediction is 49ers 23, Jets 16. Yeah, I gave the prediction as part of the Chili Cook-Off show. I want to play that right now. Let's play the San Francisco Fire Department Chili Cook-Off show. I'm wearing a different hat in that show. Did a little bit earlier, but I needed a little bit of a break from talking. So don't be scared here as I change hats really quickly to share what I did this weekend. As part of my 49ers Jets prediction video, I was able to share my experiences. One of the judges at the 17th annual San Francisco Fire Department Chili Cook-Off.
Are you doing this 8-hour brisket here that we smoked? With our own secret rub over here, we have about 6 different chilies that we have blended in here. And we have some A5 Wagyu to top it off with.
We're stationed 11 on 26 in Church.
And yes, the competition was intense. They were actually grilling that Wagyu to put into the chili. 22 stations brought their chili entries, and we had to try all of them, including this, Station 6. Look at the mission-style booth. They called it the El Camino Chili. Included some nice avocado inside. That was one of my favorite booths. Here's the AM/PM booth. We went through all of them, and as judges, we were very full by the time this finished. Ocean's 15, the Vegas theme. This right here, this is Station 49, so you have the 49ers theme. Nice Christian McCaffrey and Joe Montana jerseys. How about this from Station E40, the Waffle Bowl for the chili? That one was quality. SFPD also had their entry, and so did the Palace of Fine Arts. That's Station 16, the one that has the Joe Montana jersey inside. Shout out to San Francisco's neighborhoods, Haight-Ashbury. The chili put back into the Frito bag. I really like what Station 39 did with their presentation. Thumbs up to them. Presentation of the chili and of the booth. Really, really quality stuff. The proceeds benefited the San Francisco Firefighter Toy Program. It was a good event for a good cause. And this was the best booth winner, Station 13, the Brock Purdy station. Hog to a chili, complete with the hog noses. Boudin sourdough bread was the bowl for that chili. Station 36 did a good job as well. By this point, we were really, really full. Look at the line out the door. The 17th annual Johnny V chili cook-off at the Marina Green. And here's the judgment.
Who had the best chili? 51? 51. All right, we're going to go announce this right now.
All right, finally, we have the best chili. You've already heard from them. They were the worst booth. 51.
Really looking forward to heading back next year. It was one of those quintessential San Francisco days that started off a little overcast, then the sun came out. But nice representation of all the neighborhoods at the San Francisco Fire Department Chili Cook-Off. By the way, if you tuned in here for the 49ers Jets prediction, well, I guess I could give it on this little shorter show as well. 23-16, 49ers are going to beat the Jets on Monday Night Football. I think that most of the attendees at the chili cook-off this weekend up at the Marina Green would agree. All right, I changed hats just like that. Magic. Played that. 49ers have inducted Frank Gore into their Hall of Fame. Why don't we watch this? The 49ers just sent this to me, so I think that this is perfect timing to debut this. Frank Gore inducted. Alex Smith spoke.
My great honor to kick off this special night as we induct one of the most iconic players in this franchise history into the 49ers Hall of Fame. Tonight, we celebrate a man who has defined what it means to be a San Francisco 49er, the legendary Frank Gore.
Y'all did so much for me and my family. It's, y'all don't know. You know, well, I came up very tough, and it was easy to get to the NFL. I had to deal with a lot to get here. Two ACLs, two shoulders. Y'all still took a chance on me. My goal, when y'all took that chance, I was gonna let y'all know. Y'all made the right decision.
Wow. I want to keep that playing here. We got some B-roll. Frank Gore inducted into the 49ers Hall of Fame. An emotional speech. It's the first I had seen of that. 49ers just sent that to me. That's a look at his statue in the Hall of Fame. There's another look at Alex Smith coming up on stage. Jed York speaking. That was some moving stuff. There's Patrick Willis, inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this offseason. Frank Gore is part of the 49ers organization again now. He's in the scouting department, and you heard that. He overcame the two ACLs, the two shoulders. There was a lot of resilience, a lot of perseverance to earn Frank Gore a spot in the 49ers Hall of Fame. I will go back and say that the coolest Frank Gore stat is that he played 16 seasons. He had exactly 16,000 rushing yards. How about that from Frank Gore? So he's inducted into the 49ers Hall of Fame. I'm ready to answer some questions here. We just went through all of week one. That was a lot of fun. And I want to tweet this Frank Gore video out. Frank Gore has been inducted into the 49ers Hall of Fame. The team sent out some B-roll, which includes part of a fantastic speech from Gore. Really cool stuff. All right, let's go to some of the questions here. We'll go for a few minutes, and then we'll take it easy. We'll get ready for a big day tomorrow, 49ers and the Jets. I could even talk a little about this matchup tomorrow. I mean, it's, to me, the game is going to be a whole lot more competitive than a lot of people think, because I think a lot of people are basing their evaluation of this matchup on who the Jets were last year. And they think, they'll add Aaron Rodgers. They'll be a little bit better. They're going to be a whole lot better. They've not only added Aaron Rodgers, the Jets have also added Tyron Smith, left tackle, the former Cowboy, and Morgan Moses, the former Raven, to right tackle. So a bona fide, atrocious offensive line has gotten a lot better. They also had Laken Tomlinson, the former 49er. He's now with the Seahawks. They've replaced him at left guard. They have Elijah Vera Tucker playing right guard. John Tippmann is the only offensive lineman who was with the Jets last year, who's with them again here as a starter in 2024. They needed a big overhaul of the O-line, and they got it. They needed a big overhaul of the quarterback position. They got it. The defense was already number three in the NFL last year. Some of the best cover guys in the NFL are on the Jets at multiple different positions. PFF's top five graded cover players from the back seven, so linebacker or DB, four of the five top graded guys in the entire NFL will be in tomorrow night's game. Number one is Sauce Gardner from the Jets. That's the cornerback. Number two is CJ Mosley, the Jets linebacker. Number three is Jalen Johnson out of Fresno. Shout out to that, the Bears cornerback. Number four is Quincy Williams, the Jets linebacker. And number five is Charvarius Ward, the 49ers cornerback. So you got a lot of elite cover players in this football game, with Brock Purdy and Aaron Rodgers staring down these cover guys on the other side, and hopefully not staring them down too much. Otherwise, that would mean some interceptions in this game. So you've got top-level QBs against top-level cover guys. That is the ingredient for, and those are the ingredients for an awesome, awesome night of football. You also have got good players rushing the passer. Quinnen Williams on the Jets, Bosa on the 49ers. I mean, and then the stylistic similarities of both of these teams, with Robert Saleh, the former 49ers assistant, being the head coach of the Jets. I mean, there is a lot to like in this game. I think the top matchup, though, has to be Purdy and that 49ers offense against the Jets defense because of all those good cover guys. Other side of the ball, though, the 49ers are trying to get back into the ranks of the elite defensively. It's a good way to start is to play Aaron Rodgers and company. All right, I'm ready to answer some of the questions. Let's go. If the Niners defense doesn't pressure Rodgers early on, he might just take control and play aggressively. The Niners can't afford to let him have the opportunity to make plays unchallenged. Well, the key for that is to stop the run. You absolutely have to stop the Breeze Hall attack from the Jets, because if that doesn't happen, then Aaron Rodgers is not going to be pressured, and that's going to create problems for the 49ers. Yes, Frank Gore absolutely gets into the NFL Hall of Fame. 16,000 career rushing yards. It's number three all time, right? Number two or number three. He's in the top five all time in terms of career rushing yards. The longevity is an asset. Frank Gore is a Hall of Famer on all fronts. Where's Jim Everett? Mike and I were just talking about how much we like Jim Everett. I think he's a troll, but he's a friendly troll. And I think he adds some spice to the comment section, but his Rams, unfortunately, did not win tonight. So I don't think that he's going to be online. Wolf is nervous for the regular season opener. I'm excited. I'm just excited to cover an actual 49ers game again. It's going to be a lot of fun. Mark wants a place to eat. Where do you want your place to eat? You got to give me a location. You got to narrow it down a little bit. San Francisco? You need one right now, probably best off going to the Taco, either Sam's for the burger up in North Beach or Taco Rey Cancun down in the Mission. Daniel's right. It's not going to be an easy game for the 49ers. The Jets do have a solid roster. Will the D implement the star position because of Staley? The star position is going to be D'Amore Lenore. Lenore's going to play outside. He's going to play inside. Now, if they add another position with a lot of adaptability, it might be Malik Mustafa down the course of the season, but I don't think that's going to be right away. I think that's a package that you develop over the course of the year. We got Johnny Unitas here saying he can't wait for Monday Night Football. I can't either. I think 43 minutes is about right. That is our rundown. If you like the NFL Blitz, we went through the entire league. Let me know in the comment section. Not sure that there's any week one winner that's better than the 49ers. I think that was an auspicious start for the 49ers if you're watching what the rest of the league has to offer. We knew that the Chiefs and the Ravens are good. I thought the Eagles showed some potential improvement. But what I saw over the course of Sunday did not impress me all too much. I saw some good games. I saw some entertaining football. But when it comes time to try to dethrone the 49ers, it's going to take more than just that. All right, everybody, thanks for watching. Get some good sleep. Tomorrow, the journey begins.